Shabbat Shalom, world.
Yeah.
Very soon, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, let's do a quick placement over here on what we've been doing. We have gotten into the major sugya of Tarovet here, and some of the ideas that we've discussed lately were, wow. I mean, yesterday we were talking about Ein Mevatlin Isser L'chatchila, and we were talking about Rabbi Yehuda Shita, about Min B'mino Eino Batel, and we were talking about the idea of Maliach Kiroteach and Kovosh Izki Mevusha. And we spoke about the difference between chelev, which is mefa'afea, and things which are not mefa'afea. We talked about the reliability of a kapila armor. We talked about kedei klipa. We talked about kedei netila. We talked about when you can rely on taima, when you are supposed to have specifically a shishim, when you can actually have a yisrael tasted, such as a case of truma, mixing with chulin. And we also talked about yesterday, with the end of the day, how we got there. I'll explain in a moment. We were talking about Rabbi Yehuda Shita, about min b'mino eino batel. How did we work that out? So remember that in tracing the steps to how we arrived at the shishim, we went through early cases in the days of the late Tanoim, and that was the days of Rebbe and Bar Kappara. And we were talking about, first, how they experimented with different ratios. So we spoke about the case of the 43-1, a case of a 45-1, a case of a 47-1. And then we found that Bar Kappara, and this is according to Rashi now, Rashi understands that Bar Kappara found a D'oraisa mekor for the din of shishim. What was his D'oraisa mekor? It was the fact that the Torah specifically gives us a case where we have a tarovet in the Torah. And that's a case of a nazir who has to bring, among his other karbonas, he has to bring a shlamim, which is called the El Nazir. The El Nazir has an absolutely unique halacha, which is that the foreleg of the El Nazir is given to the Kohen as a truma. But crazy enough, it's first boiled up together with the rest of the shlamim. Now, at least this was 3 out of 4 shitas that we had yesterday that we brought from Bar Kappara in understanding the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and the Chachomi. But in any event, if you hold that that's what the Torah is saying, that it has to be boiled up in the same pot, then it must be that you have a case in which the Isser of the Truma is going to be bought. Now, how many parts to parts is that? Well, that depended on whether we were looking at the entire organism of the Shlomi vis-a-vis the foreleg, the Zroa. If that was the case, then we had actually 60-1, and that was Shishi. If you did not hold that the atzamot give off a tam that asers, then we were talking about meat to meat. Well, meat to meat, a foreleg has very little meat in it. I mean, unless, you know, this particular animal was a weightlifter and so on, maybe it got some nice big biceps, but it's hardly likely. So generally speaking, the meat to meat proportion is 60, but the overall proportion, including meat and bones and so on, is actually 100-1. The meat to meat is 100-1, whereas the entire organism would be only 60-1, because there's much more meat in the animal as a whole than there is in the proportionately as there is in the foreleg. Okay, so that gave us the two shitas that were brought by Bar Kappara, very early shitas that the Torah says 60 or maybe 100. Now, we had a question on that, and that question is what's going to bother us today. The question we had on that was that there's a braita that clearly says, do not use that case as your model for bittul, because the braita says, zehu heter abba bichlal iser, this is a unique case, and what do we mean it's a unique case? Seems to be saying it's a unique case, and it's therefore something that cannot be used as a makar. All right, so we said, well, if that's the case, how could Bar Kappara use it as the makor for shishim or for mea? And one of our answers was, our first answer was Abaya's answer. And Abaya's answer is, all that the Braita meant was that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who generally holds that min b'minoi is not batal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is not a good example. It's a unique case in which min b'mino is batal. And where did Rabbi Yehuda get the idea that it's a unique case instead of actually using it as the overall model? Well, he says, look, we know that the Torah says that it's not batal min b'mino because of mixing blood on Yom Kippur. And the Dama Par should easily overwhelm the Dama Sawyer, and yet the Torah considers it to be completely okay to mix them. And continues to refer to the Dama Sawyer as Dama Sawyer, despite the fact that it's no longer noticeable in min b'mino. So obviously, min b'mino is not batal. And the reason that he chooses that as the model instead of this model is because this case is absolutely unique. Why is it unique? It's unique because it's the only time that the Torah says to go out of your way to be mevatel iser. Who ever heard of such a thing? So normally, ein mevatlin iser lechatchila. Some learn from here that that's a deraisa, because of the whole discussion in the Gemara, or it's a chiddush because it's the only time where the Torah told you bedafka as a mitzvah, go out and be mevatel iser lechatchila. That was the answer that Abaye gave to the question of how we can learn, how Bar Kapara can learn the dinim of bittul from a case which is said to be in the Braita a unique case which should not serve as a model. That was the first answer, that when it says this case is absolutely unique, it means it's absolutely unique according to Rabbi Yehuda, because min b'minai normally would not be batal at all. Today, we have a second approach, not a Abaye's approach, but Rava's approach. And let us take Rava's approach, which turns out to be a major turning point in our understanding of Taravet. Rava Amar, this is on the bottom of Tzadik Chet Amud Beit, Rava Amar, oh, it's true, absolutely true, that this is a unique case. But you know what I mean by unique? By the way, remember, it's not unique because of the fact that it is a mitzvah to be mevatel iser. That indeed is a chiddush, who, and that's why we don't learn from him. But that's not what the Braita meant when it said it's unique. Because the Braita said, as Tosis explains, this is unique in the sense that it's heter abba mechlal iser, nothing to do with the fact that you're mevatel lechatchila, but that normally a mixture like this would be aser, which is a different issue. Okay, so now what's Rava's approach? Rava says the reason this is unique is because it is referring to a concept called ta'am ke'iker. Now, what ta'am ke'iker means is that we view just the taste of a thing as if it is the real thing. Now, remember that as far as halacha is concerned, we only go according to primitive impressions, as I've explained a million times. And therefore, in terms of the halacha, when something is absorbed into something else, and it has only the taste of that thing, let's say the fat, and the fat now has disappeared into the mixture, but we taste it, right? So the truth is that obviously, in physical terms, we're only tasting it because we are tasting the molecules of the original substance, which we are capable of detecting with our taste buds or whatever, with smell and so on and so forth, which are extremely sensitive. However, in terms of our perception, our visual perception, this thing does not exist. It's not here anymore. All that's here is the taste. So you can argue with the halakha as much as you want. Yeah, but taste means it's here, stupid. But that doesn't matter. Because as far as we're concerned, it's gone. It's mamashut is not here. The mamashut of a thing is called be'en, when it is still around. That's with an ayin. But if it's just a tam, normally I would have said that, says Rava, normally I would have said that generally by kachin, tam is ke'iker. And we're going to see how we learn that out in the Torah. And I'll bet you already know, because you remember the whole sugya and zvachim about what happens if something comes into contact with a carbon chatas, and now it means that it gets all the dinim of the chatas, and we learn out from there that kol hanogea ba yikdash kamoha, and we learn that as a general din in kachim, anything that absorbed taste from another piece of kodesh is going to need to take that taste into consideration as if it is actually there. That concept, one of the most important concepts in Ta'arovet, is called, and please write this down on your crushed tree, Ta'am Ki'ikar. That just the taste of a thing is as if the thing itself is present. Now, in this case, normally, since we're dealing over here with the carbon shalomim, and we're dealing over here with the truma of that carbon shalomim, which has a din of kodesh, normally, the kachim, says Rava, this would in fact be asur, because in this case, we still have the tam, and in kachim, that should be a no-no, kamash malan, therefore, it's coming to tell us this is a unique case, and in this case, it is mutter. So let's try to figure out what Rava is saying that is different than Abaye. He obviously has to agree that we're going according to Rabbi Yehuda. And the din is min b'minay loy batil. And in this case, because otherwise we were mevatil the tam, so it doesn't matter if it's tam ke'ikar. So he agrees essentially with what Abaye said, and that's going according to Rabbi Yehuda. But he's changing one very crucial point, because Abaye is saying that the din of min b'minay not being bato is true even on a tam. And that's because he assumes, Abaye assumes, that the din of tam ke'ikar is a klal in kol ha'Torah kula. So therefore, in this case, if Rabbi Yehuda holds that min b'mino is not bato, then it would also be true that even the tam of something, which is a min b'mino, would not be bato. And that's why it says this is a unique case because the tam is batal. But Rava holds the din of min b'mino lo batal was never meant to apply just to tastes because that is not really present at all. And Rabbi Yehuda never said that min b'mino is usher if you're talking about something that isn't there and it's just the tam. After all, what was the source of Rabbi Yehuda, remember? It was the blood of the par and the soyer that was mixing on Yom Kippur. That is a situation of tam? No. That is a situation that is called, please write this down, lach balach. That was a situation in which you have a liquid which mixes with a liquid and therefore will permeate, obviously, the entire liquid, but the blood is there. So how, therefore, Taina's Rava, how in the world could you apply the klal of min b'mino lo bato that you learn out from an actual blood, which is present? How would you come around to applying that to taste? Where did the Torah ever say that taste is not bato? Only by a carbon chatas. Ah, but the carbon chatas is kachim, and maybe therefore it only applies to the dinim of kachim. So that is the only thing that is different in Rava than Abaye. Rav is saying exactly the same thing that Abaye said. When we say that this is unique, it's unique because it's unique. Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda that min b'mino lo batil. He's only saying that when you say zehu heter abar michlal iser, it means that in this case particularly, Rabbi Yehuda would apply the din even to the tam. Why? Because by kachim, tam ke'iker, and therefore, since we're dealing with kachim, so then it does make sense to say that this is absolutely unique, because normally, when it comes to kachim, we would have said, al libe de Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mino lo batel, even in the case of taima. But if that's the case, then we have to wonder about, okay, how do we learn the din of shishim, or how do we learn the din of me'ah from here? Okay, that we're gonna ask in a moment, and of course we'll come out with the same answer that we came out before, that we're gonna learn a chumrah and so on. But let's take it slow. So first, our question is: if Rava says that this is a unique situation, in which we learn that the ta'am ke'ikr is actually batal. The question is, why not use this as the model? The ligmar mina. So let's say, instead of Rabbi Yehuda claiming that ta'am ke'ikr bakotshim implies that min b'mino lo batal, why don't we say to Rabbi Yehuda, let's be honest. We have a case over here of El Nazir, which is Kachim, which Tam Ke'ikr, and in Mim B'minay, and it is Batal. So why are you trying to tell us that it's not Batal? Why don't we use this case as the model? Well, I mean, because the Torah said by the Korban Chatas, Kol Asher Yigaviv Sarai Yigdash. Anything that comes in touch with that Chatas is going to be Kodesh. What does that mean, it's going to be Kodesh? It is Kodesh, no. It's going to be Kodesh Liyot Kamoa. It's going to get exactly the same din as the Chatas itself. If that Chatas was Pasul, so then whatever touched it is going to say it's Notar or it's Pigol. Then whatever touched it and absorbed from it is also going to be Pasul. If it's kosher, but it's kosher kachim and it only has till one day to be eaten, then even if what touched it was, let's say, a shlomim that would have been able to be eaten until the end of the next day, it's only going to be allowed to be eaten like the chumrah of the chatas, because it absorbed from the chatas. So therefore, if the chatas is kosher, you could still eat what touched it, but it gets the chumrah of the chatas. So let's say it was a shlomim and it would have been able to be eaten by anybody. Now it can only be eaten by kohanim. Let's say it was a shlomim and it could be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Now it can only be eaten in the Azorah. So whatever the chumrot are of that chatas now apply to whatever touches it. Therefore, you see that obviously we learn from there, says Rabbi Yehuda, that it actually is going to be a tam ke'ikr, and it apparently, no matter what it is, it has to be dealt with, and even if there's whatever, a shishim, it doesn't say anything about that. It says kol asher yigaba. So because of that, it's not going to be batal. But wait a second. You've got two contradictory mikorot. One of them is the mikor of chatat, that it's not batal. The other one is the mikor of el nazir, that it is batal. Why does Rabbi Yehuda insist on learning it from the chatat l'chumrah, instead of learning out of the case of El Nazir Lakula? Same question we asked before. Well, that's because this whole halacha is an insane chiddush. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is that Ein Mevatrin Isser L'Chatchila, like we said. And certainly, even if you hold that that's not a deraisa, it's still a chiddush because the Torah never tells you to go out and be Mevatrin Isser L'Chatchila. So since this is a violation of normative halacha, that's called chiddushu, and it's not a thing that you can go and apply elsewhere if we know for a fact that it is violating the normal dinim that we apply elsewhere. Ah, but then that leads us to the same question we had before. If it's a chiddush, how could Bar Kapora use it as the mekor of the din of shishim or mea? So then, ihachi lemea v'shishim nami lo ligmar. We should not learn what Bar Kapora learns from it. And we give the same answer we gave before. We're not learning from it something that would be a kula, and you could say, how can you learn from a chiddush the kula? What we're saying is, even in this case where the Torah was very makel, and it said, go ahead and be mevatel it l'chatchila, did it allow you to be mevatel it in less than shishim? No. So therefore, we're saying, l'chumra, normally what would we have said? That you go according to the rov. After all, the Torah says, acharei rabim lahatot. Why aren't we going according to the rov? Oh, because the Torah is insisting that we have shishim. Okay, so that's what we're doing here. We're not learning out a kula. Oto ananda kula gamrinan, l'chumra ka gamrinan. Because maybe a writer, we would say, the halacha all over the Torah, rely on the rove. And since over here we're going to say, no, not enough to have a rove, you're going to need to have shishim or even mea, therefore we have a right to use it as a mekor. Okay, I hope I'm not losing anybody over here, because this taroves is extremely difficult, And it is really a very concentrated Gemara that appears only in a couple of places which affect each other. This is one of the most fundamental couple of pages that have to do with Taroves, and therefore don't expect it to be a breeze. But still, it is easily understandable if you put on your thinking caps. Now, thinking caps, however, generally require open eyes and unsteady breathing and those kind of stuff. It also requires keeping necks up instead of having them downright, looking closely at the letters so closely that you can't see them. That kind of stuff doesn't work for Taroves. So again, put on those thinking caps and everything will be as clear as daylight.
Really? All right. 45 years ago, Barnea told me when learning this same sugya not to get mixed up. I only now understand what is referring.
There you go. Excellent. It hadn't done you much good, though. You've been mixed up the whole time since. Maybe that's part of Taroves. Anyway, so now we've got yet another answer. Another answer to what? Another answer to how we could use this din of El Nazir, according to Bar Kappara, as a source for Shishim, or perhaps Mea, if it said in the Braita, this is unique, the only place where you've got Heter Abba Michal Isser like this, so then how could it be a model? So here's Abaya's approach was, it only means we don't say Min B'minei Loi Batel according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's why it's unique. Rava's approach is the same thing, except that he adds that it's only because it's Kachim that we have that concern. Otherwise, it wouldn't be Tam Keiker at all. And Ravina now says, I'll tell you what it meant. It didn't mean the general thing that you think about the fact that we can eat the Zeroa B'Shela. No. The point over here is it's unique in terms of the Mekom Chatach. Now, you will recall that we had before the whole discussion about what happens if a fetus sticks out a leg, right? Now, this is a similar case. The leg in that case became trepha. Now, we cut it off while he sticks it out of the womb. What is the din over there about the place where the leg was originally connected to the rest of the body? That is called Mekom Chatach. The Mekom Chatach itself remained usur. And that's the Chiddush over here. The Torah says you can cut off that leg, give it to the Kohen, and eat the rest. Eat the rest? How could I eat the rest? The part that was connected to the Zohar right at the end, I'm not allowed to eat that, am I? Oh, yes, you are. Ah, so then that is a unique halacha. That's what it meant. Brilliant. And therefore, it's nothing to do with all the stuff you guys were talking about. And it's no contradiction to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi that it's the mokar of Bar Kappara's Meya or Shishim. No. All we're talking about over here is that don't use this as a model to tell me that you're allowed to eat a Mekom Chatach where you had something also that was cut off as something mutter, like the case of the embryo. No. Lo nitzcha lo mekom chatach, where normally we say the Omer mekom chatach in general, bi'alma is usur, and in this one particular case, it's shori, and therefore zehu heter abba michal isur. Wow. Takes us out of all of our problems, explains things, make perfectly good sense, all part of what we've been learning, and is great. Okay, so now we've got three answers to the problem of how it is that Bar Kappara would use this as a model. Now we know. Now the question is it indeed true that Bar Kappara would have said such a thing as it was quoted over here, and that we would be Mevatel Tam in Mea? So Rav Dimi was saying over what Rav Asi had said, that according to Bar Kappara, we end up with Mea to one. Omer le Abaye, is that true? It makes no sense at all if you look at the Mishnah. The Chol Yisurin Shebetorah B'Mea? What are you going to do with the Mishnah in Orla? So now, in this Mishnah, we learn about things that give over. First, the truth is there are two Mishnayot over here, one after the other. So initially, what the Mishnah says is that kol hamechamedz v'hametabel v'hamedameya is lahachmir, and sometimes it is lahakel u'lahachmir. So what that means is that when you have things, and this is talking about truma that gets mixed in to chulin. So if the truma that got mixed in is a mechamed, so it's a leavening agent, or if it's a taste spice, or in any event that it just mixes truma v'chulin without actually being a leavening agent and without being a spice, we always treat it l'chumra. So let me tell you over the Mishnah first so that we can understand it easily. So the Mishnah says there are times we always treat it l'chumra, and there's times that we don't treat it always l'chumra, but sometimes we treat it l'hakel, and sometimes we treat it l'hachmir. So the Mishnah explains, what do I mean when I say this? If it's l'hachmir, that's where it's min b'mino. I always go l'chumra if it's min b'mino. And when do I say it's l'hakel v'l'hachmir? That's where it's min b'she'eino mino. And now the Mishnah explains itself, and it says, well, what is meant by the case of, in the Sefer it explains, which is really the next Mishnah in Ora, but this is all like one long Mishnah. It's got a lot of parts to it. L'hakel v'l'hachmir min b'she'eino mino. What do I mean over there? Well, I mean, in a case where, let's say, grisim were boiled up together with adashim. So now I boiled a bunch of beans together with lentils. And the beans were truma, and the lentils were chulin. So that's min b'she'eino mino. And what do I mean when I say lahakel v'lahachmir? So, im yesh behem benotein tam, if they can be tasted, then we go l'chumra. Bein yesh behem lahalot b'me'a ve'achad, bein ein behem lahalot b'me'a ve'achad. It doesn't matter whether you've got 100 to 1 or you don't have 100 to 1. Now let's stop right here. Why are we talking about 100 to 1? I thought that was only bar kapara. Where does this come from? Now please remember that there is a very special case that the Torah itself has defined. And that is that there is a halacha called, as you know, Trumat Maaser. So if a Levi has Maaser, he has to take off Truma from that Maaser. And that Truma is 1/10 of the Maaser. It's not like the normal Truma, which is a 50th or a 60th, which is only a drop on in itself. And Chita Achat, Potera, Tetakri, and all of that. No. It is the Yikar Din. 10% of 10%. Well, 10% of 10% usually equals 1%. Now, what the Torah calls this new thing is Mikdasho. Whoa. Mikdasho. Now, Mikdasho, yes, Pashtus, it means the part that is Kodesh. But it can also be understood as Chazal or Dereshit. Mikdasho means Mikadisho. That which would, if it would fall back in, would end up ossering the whole mess. Right? So what does that mean? 1% of truma is enough to aser all of the chulin heter that's with it, because it says this is the mikatsho. And remember that the word katsho also means to aser things. Pen tukdash by kerem, correct? Where we have the mixture in a kerem, kalaya kerem is pen tukdash. Mukdash means it's set aside. So this is the mikatsho would mean that you would not be allowed to eat it. Okay, that means that here the Torah has described a concept of bittul of 100 to 1. But if it's 99 to 1, then it's called mekatsho and it's going to aser. So that means that we have a makor here, which is unique to truma. We don't find it anywhere else. And that is that truma mixed with chulin is actually only going to be bittul in 100 parts of chulin to 1 part of truma. So that's why this is something that, even though it's a special din of ta'arovet, it doesn't serve as a model. It is a halacha, specifically legabe dinim of truma. And by the way, it's important for you to know as well that you cannot use this as a model anyway, because anything which could be eaten by Barneas are considered to be a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Anything which is capable of being eaten normally is not batal at all. So if you've got somebody who can eat it, it may well be that this is not something that the Torah would allow you to be mevatel, even in 100, maybe, I would think. But because after all, there's always a Barnea lurking in the background ready to eat. And therefore, this is a special halacha that it can be shared even with Barnea's guests, and it would not be us. But only if it's 100 to 1. Okay, so let's continue the Mishnah. If you can still taste those beans in the lentils, so then the din is that it would be usser, and I don't care how much there is. There could be even 100 to 1. So ben yesh behem la'alot b'me'ah ve'achad, or ben ein behem la'alot b'me'ah ve'achad. It's always going to be usser. Now let me tell you a kula. Since Barnea can taste it, and if he tastes it and there's no taste of beans, so im ein behem enotein tam, then we're going to go l'kula. And ben sheyesh behem la'alot b'me'ah ve'achad, ben ein behem la'alot b'me'ah ve'achad, it's always going to be mutter. Now, when you say it doesn't have 100 to 1, okay, so you're obviously not saying it doesn't matter. You're saying we will go back to the default bittul. We have a special din of bittul when it comes to the dinim of truma, which is midameya, and certainly if it makes an impact, it's mechametz, it's mitabel, where then I can still see its presence. Okay, yes, that is the 100 to 1. But if the 100 to 1 does not need to apply because I don't have those impacts, I have neither taste in the case of the spice, I have no signs of the leavening agent here. It seems to be just like anything else. And I see no taste. So therefore, it goes back to the default. Okay, what's the default? Well, if it's not 100 to 1, I mean, it's got to be 60, right? So you say, ein behem la'alot b'me'ah achad. Okay, but what does it have? Ela b'mai. If it's not 100 to 1, how much is it? Isn't it the only other shear that we know, which is the shear of 60? So you see from here that the Mishnah is making it very clear, says Abaya to Rav Dimi, that Rav Asi is wrong. The Mishnah says the default position on bittul of taste is, if there's no actual taste there, 1 in 60. And don't give me this stuff about 1 in 100. That was unique to the case of Truma. Says Rav Dimi to Abaya, no, not true. The default position is that we don't do the chumrah of Truma, which needs me'ah ve'echad, and instead it is only batal b'me'ah. So we don't need 101. It's only 100, which means that when we were talking about 101, we thought that that meant 100 parts chulin to 1 part truma. Oh, no, 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 no. It means we have 101 part chulin to 1 part truma. Whereas here, we can be very makel and only have 100 parts of chulin to 1 part truma. That's what it means. But it certainly is not jumping down from 1 part to 100. From 1 part to 100 to 1 part to 60. No, no, no. What? Says Abai, what are you talking about? I mean, the way we read the Mishnah the whole time, the Reisha, and the Reisha was talking about where you've got a mixture of Truma and Chulin, where we say we're going to be very Machmir. So we said, well, we're going to be very Machmir if 1 in 100. No? So, I mean, over here, it's got to be 60. I mean, I understand. You can't repeat the same case twice. It's ridiculous. Because that's what we thought, that the first part meant 100 to 1, not 101 to 1. It was 101 total. That's what it meant, me'ah ve'chad, right? That's what I assumed. So if the ratio is talking about 100 to 1, then the safe has got to be talking about 60 to 1. It can't say the same case, but in this case, we're going to be very mako. And how are we going to be mako? By being machmir. Come off it, man. So obviously, the last part of the Mishnah is telling me we're dropping down to echad keneged shishim. Because, look, may I read the beginning of the Mishnah with you again, just to kindly remind you of how little sense your position makes? Read the Resha. If I'm going to be machmir, I'm going to be machmir in a case of bin b'minai, and it explains, listen to this, se'or shel chitim. So now you've got a leavening age, you've got this sourdough, and it falls into dough of chulin, normal dough, shenafa li'isat chitim. And this is the amount of sourdough that you would use if you want to actually get a nice leavening into your challah, right? So there's enough in that truma, kidei lechametz. There's enough there for the lady who's baking those challahs. She's very happy until she finds out it's truma, but she was very happy to have her nice fluffy challahs for Shabbos. And then it turns out that, as usual, the whole lot has to be given to Barnea. These Kohanim are very sneaky. But anyway, so in that case, if there's sufficient there to be mechametz, then it doesn't matter. Now listen to me, please, Rav Dimi. It doesn't matter, it says in the Mishnah, Bein yesh bo kedei lahalot b'mei av echad, whether there's enough to be canceling that truma in a mixture of 101, which means to any normal person, 101 is 100 parts chulin to 1 part truma. Okay? It would have enough, and it doesn't matter because I can still taste it. So ben yesh bo kedei la'alot b'mei avechad, ben ein bo kedei la'alot b'mei avechad, it's osir. Okay? In the event that ein bo la'alot b'mei avechad, it doesn't matter whether there's enough of a leavening agent to be detectable or not, if it's min b'minai. So then, ben sheyesh bo kedei lechametz, ben sheein bo kedei lechametz, it's usur. Now, can I ask you how do you read this Mishnah? It's absurd. The Mishnah begins by telling me that the case is always going to be defined either by taste. When we say taste, we mean detectability. And that would mean chimut or tam, anything that is detectable. So we're going to be using, and this is another piece on your crushed trees, kedei lechametz, because kedei lechametz is similar to tam. It's detectable. So if it has kedei lechametz, it will not be batel any more than tam would be batel. It would have the same dinim as tam. Good. So now, how is it, according to you, can I ask you something? The Mishnah says, well, we're going to be machmir, and we're going to need 100 to 1. But in a case where it's min b'she'en amino, there we will be mako, and we're only going to need 100 to 1. That's how you're reading the Mishnah. You tell me a 2-year-old can't read the Mishnah like that. It's insane. You've got to be giving me a lower, obviously, a lower proportion if you're telling me we're going to be mako. So, Reisha v'Seifa, you're telling me the two contrasting parts of the Mishnah, the contrast between the min b'mino and the Reisha, and min b'she'eino mino, which is supposed to be lakula in the Seifa, the end result is it's exactly the same. It's absolutely absurd. Obviously, it's got a min b'shishi. Says Rav Dimi, well, yes, if you want to insist that your interpretation of the Reisha of the Mishnah is correct, but it's all mixed up. When the Mishnah said before, b'me'a ve'echad, it didn't mean the total mixture is b'me'a ve'echad. It meant 1 part truma in 101 parts chulin. That's what it meant. The Seifa said, we can be very makel. I'm ready to go down to 100 to 1. But where do you get the idea that I'm ready to go down to 60 to 1? That's not true. The default position in all bittul is 100 to 1. And by chulin and against truma, it's 101 to 1. That's the difference between kol ha-tayra kula and year. So basically, this is a very serious problem because what Rav Dimi is saying is that the Sifri is wrong. Because what was the marker in the Sifri? Migdasho mimenu. Migdasho was definitely 1%. And that means that if it's any less than 1%, if it's not the ma'aser min ha-ma'aser, that it would not be mikatsho, the way it's reading it, mikatsho. So how in the world can you get away with saying what he's saying if it's against the beferish abrayta? I don't understand. Okay, so this is a big sugya. Basically, many of the achronim, it's very achronish sugya because we don't find, we don't find it discussed in the Rishonim. And it depends, basically, what we're talking about. And the fact is that we do take the Sifrei literally. But where? In the case that the Sifrei is talking about. The Sifrei is talking about cases of grain, right? That's what the Pasuk was referring to. So you take out Mikatsho Mimenu. But that is called Yavesh B'Yavesh. And therefore, in that case, so let's keep our Munachim clear. Yavesh B'Yavesh is not the same as Lach B'Lach or Lach B'Yavesh. Because over there, since you have a medium that spreads around, it's a liquid, where it's a liquid and it's going to go through the entire mixture, the Chachomim were adding one additional part to be machmir and to make sure that it's actually all going to be bought. Okay, why that would be true, we have to see through the sugya in general what the marker would be, that lach would be more chomer than yavesh. But in any event, it may well be that this is a special halacha, according to Rav Dimi, that is differentiating between the case given in the Sifrei, which is a case of yavesh b'yavesh in the pasuk, and cases of either lach b'lach or lach b'yavesh. So keep those munachim clear on your crushed tree. There's concepts of lach b'lach, concepts of yavesh b'yavesh, and of lach b'yavesh. This is a side point, but it's necessary to point out, because otherwise, how did we get away with the whole limud? Okay, so then the way Rav Dimi is learning is that the Reisha and the Seifa are actually referring to Mea Ve'echad would mean 101 to 1. And the Kula is we don't need 101 to 1 in the Seifa, but we do need 100 to 1. And therefore, you can't ask that from here we see that we go down to 60. But wait a minute. This is an amazing question. Because it just makes so many strange assumptions about physical reality. We were willing, says the Gemara, okay, we were willing to talk about a case of 100 to 1. But 101 to 1, how could it possibly still have taste? Now that is a good question. Okay, again, these type of subtleties in sensory data may be beyond normal people who are not chefs and kapilas themselves, but the Gemara considers this to be a devastating question. How could you actually insist that we would have any kind of detectability? And remember, we say taste. It doesn't mean taste anymore because we just introduced this new idea of a mechametz, which is the equivalent of taste, so that a leavening agent, if it's detectable, then it's also going to be the equivalent. But surely, once it's at 100 to 1, it's going to tell me it might be us or even 101 to 1 if I can still detect the taste. Why, that's absurd. B'mea v'chad, amaylo batil. Once the taste, now remember, we don't mean it's not detectable necessarily, but what we mean is that it is so chalush that it shouldn't have a practical application halachically. Because again, remember, that Chazal are used to dealing with halacha as a concept that defines its own closed vision of what is considered to be a tam, what is considered to be detectable, and what is considered to be present and what is not present. It does not impinge on the world of utilizing any type of detectors that are not really available to the primitive human. And if you cannot see where that time is coming from, the fact that you know 100% that there's got to be a molecular base to that taste is irrelevant. In the same way that you've got these strange things that do not reproduce sexually. Of course, they do if you look through a microscope. But in terms of the halacha, they can't reproduce sexually. They keep appearing out of nowhere. Pastor, will you please go back to sleep? And therefore, since they keep coming out of nowhere, they are not considered to be organisms that sexually reproduce. Now, stop arguing with me. And therefore, so getting back to here, the way in which the concept of taste, the strength that halacha recognizes as taste. Obviously, this is not a question of, you're telling me that a chef can detect it in 100 to 1, that I agree. But in 101 to 1, that I don't agree. That's not the point. The point is that we know that there is such an attenuation of taste that, like all things in halacha, there is a definition of what is called taste and what isn't called taste. And therefore, it's not reasonable to call 100 to 1 note an actual taste. So if it would be 101, why wouldn't it be batel? That's crazy. Sir Avdimi said, I don't know, you're right. I mean, it sounds crazy, but this is the way that I was taught. Ishtik. And he could not explain how something would be 100 to 1. So Abaye, who was the one who was attacking Rav Dimi, said to him, don't give up so fast, honey babes. There's no need to give up. Because since what we're talking about over here is leavening agent, leavening agents have different levels of power. Over there, you can't start telling me, well, it's not detectable. What does that mean, it's not detectable? If it's a sufficient leavening agent to cause leavening, so it's detectable. Now, we know that there are leavening agents that could be extremely powerful. So if you leave something around for 5 days and the thing is completely filled with yeast that's going wild and reproducing like, of course, it doesn't really reproduce, but it's reproducing like cuckoo, then you put some little bit of that into the thing that is going to be affected, it's going to be affected. So you can't ask, you shouldn't give up so fast because Dilma shiny so'or dechimutso kashe. There are actually cases that are off the scale. And since there are cases that are off the scale, so you've got a black swan, those cases that are off the scale are actually enough for us to discuss in terms of the Chumrah. And I'm going to show you that there are off-scale cases. Take a look at this. Dilma shiny so'or dechimutso kashe. You might have cases in which you have an extremely powerful leavening agent. Rav Dimi hears this and he says, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot. Thank you so much. You just reminded me of such an important thing that I had learned from Rabbi Yossi Berebi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi Berebi Chanina said, do not be literal about how to define taste in halacha. Lo kol ha-shiurin shavin. There are cases that, in fact, are off of the scale. For instance, we've got the tzir of fish, okay? Now, that's sear. That's non-kosher brine. So that's extreme. As you know, if you handle any of that stuff, oh my God, you're going to be washing for hours to get the smell out of your hands, right? This stuff is very powerful. Now, the din of that, as I'm going to prove to you, is close to 200 to 1. Why do I say that? Because if you take a look at the Mishnah in Terumais, it says, Dog tame tziro asur. And what's the shear of tziro asur? Says Rabbi Yehuda, an incredible shear. One revius in, oh my gosh, in sa'atai. That's absolutely incredible. I mean, if that would be the case, so then, look, I mean, you're talking about sa'atayim. Let's take a look at the relationship of one sa'a to a revius. Because a sa'a is 6 kav, a kav is 4 lug, a lug is 4 revius, right? So then that means that in 2 sa'a, you've got essentially 6 times 4 times 2. So you've got 48 lugin. If you've got 48 lugin times 4, you've got 192 revius. That's close to 200. And he says that it's going to answer 192 parts against it. So, look, I mean, it means that if you have things that are extremely pungent or you have things that are extremely powerful leavening agents, then you have to take that into consideration. And don't talk about the normal scale. So fine, if we're talking about Sa'or, it may be off of the scale, that's all. Therefore, Rav Dimi can still claim the ratio of the Mishnah was talking about 101 to 1, and the Sefer is talking about 100 to 1. Amazing. Okay, if that's the case, then we've got a problem of Rabbi Yehuda himself. Didn't you just quote Rabbi Yehuda? Could have sworn it said Rabbi Yehuda said it's 192. Wait a minute over here. Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'mino isn't butl at all. We gotcha. So now he's coming along and he's talking about 192. And he said all along, I don't care if it's 1,000 to 1. Min b'mino is never butl. Now he's being mevatel tzir into tzir. Explain that. And now take out your trusty crush tree because we're introducing a new idea, which is called Zeya. Zeya has a lot of different applications in the Dinim of Ta'aroves, one of which you're very familiar with, which is what happens to your oven when you cook things in it and you find a deposit of moisture along the side of your oven and you were cooking a nice, delicious milchika cake. What is the din of that Zeya on your oven if you now put in a steak into that oven? So that introduces that question of Zeya. There's another type of Zeya, which means that it isn't the real thing at all. And that's not where it's literally sweating, but like the case of Tzir. Tzir is not considered to be real fish. Tzir is what comes out of the fish when you salt it. And it isn't really part of the fish that the fish is leaking this fluid. It is something that's coming out, drawn out by the melach that you put it in. That's how you get tzir and salted fish. And therefore, we don't treat it as real fish. We treat it as only the zeya of the fish. This thing has applications in so many places. Let's say legabe, can you sell your liquor for chametz if you don't sell chametz gomer? Let's say, right? Now the question is that liquor that you used, let's say, wheat or some type of other, depending on what it was, you used some type of grain. But what came out of that grain that was subsequently drained off, is that the real grain? Is it actual chametz gomer? Or is it considered also to be a type of zeya because we don't have any actual grain or there's no actual moisture in the grain that would have come out on its own, and it's only because we went through this whole process of fermentation and so on. That would be another kind of zeya. So zeya is a very important in Dinim of Ta'aroves all over. So this introduces yet another concept. Tzir is not fish. Tzir is the zeya of the fish, and because of that, we can be makel, and we don't have to worry about this particular case. That's the only reason why we are being makel. So this concept, actually, I know it's late, but just let's do just a little bit more, because it's a very important halacha. Suppose you hold something is awesome. And someone comes to you and asks, is this mutter or usr? Do you have to tell them it's usr? Or can you say, well, I'm not the guy to ask. You should go ask such and such a pesek, and he always says it's mutter. So if you want to know what to do, if you ask me, you're going to get into trouble. Don't ask me. Ask this person. Now, this is an issue that comes up not only when it's the dinim of kashrus, but also it's very common if, let's say, a woman is roya dam in a ketem, and a pesek knows that so-and-so, this such-and-such a pesek, he always says this color is not considered to be dam. He himself wasn't taught that way. Can he say, look, don't ask me, go to Rabbi so-and-so, and he'll tell you that it's okay? So then you can go to so-and-so and he'll tell you that it's okay. The place where this is an extremely painful halacha is in questions of determining time of death in terms of organ transplants, turning off machines, and so on. There's a lot of machlokas about this. And so the question is, if a particular posik does not have the ability to say that the time of death, let's say, would be defined by brainstem death, right? Can he say, go to so-and-so, don't ask me, go to so-and-so, so-and-so holds that you can turn off the machine. Now, this is a big shiloh. There's a beautiful teshuvah by Rav Lichtenstein on this, where he brings a raya. You can say, go to so-and-so. You go to Rav Waldenberg. He holds that it's mutter. Or go to so-and-so who learned by Rav Waldenberg. So this is the sugya that actually is the mukker for that kind of response, which is, okay, very, very important in many cases. So let's take a look. I'll just read this next piece. Kate said, Misharinan, the Mishnah, and the next piece said, let us take a model so that we can actually model out and we can do a simulation. Let's take meat, put it into turnip, and then that we can eat, and we'll see if we'd be able to detect the amount of meat that's the equivalent to the shear of the Gid HaNasha. So then the Gid HaNasha in the thigh would be us, right? That's what the Mishnah says. Now, when we say turnips, Omer Avuna, we're talking about turnip top. Turnip top is much more pungent, and therefore it's going to actually require more meat for you to be able to taste the meat in the middle of all of that noise, which is the taste of the turnip. You are going to need much more information, which is the taste of the meat, to overcome the noise of the turnip. That's essentially the point, which is always the point of information. That's what we're looking for over here. So the information consists that we're looking for consists of the meat. The noise is the turnip taste. And what Ravuna is saying, you have to look at the most noisy part of the turnip, which is the top of the turnip. Now, if the Mishnah takes for granted that if you can taste it, it would be usur, obviously, and this is what we started with at the beginning of the Mishnah, yesh begidin benotin tam, because otherwise the whole discussion is an exercise in futility. If ginim don't have taste, then why are we talking about tasting them? And again, obviously it doesn't mean they don't have taste. It means they don't have halacha taste. So again, we see this idea of what is called tam and how these shiurim are shiurim in a different world that is not defined by what you would call detectability, but what is defined as relevant detectability in that halacha. That's the point. So clearly our Mishnah is against the shita that we learn in this braita, the Tanya. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Ein Begidin benotin tam. And this is how we pasken halacha lemaisa, Ein Begidin benotin tam, which turns all of this discussion in the Mishnah to be irrelevant. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Ein Begidin benotin tam. And there was a maisa of a guy who brought in a shayla to Rabbi Hanina. We've seen this equivalent before. And Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina used to sit on the stairway when people were coming in to ask shaylas. Rabbi Hanina had an hour where people could come in. People still do this. They'll stand outside of Rav Yashiv's door and they'll ask him, what did he tell you? What did he tell you? So they collect the piskei halachas of a pesek. Very common. And Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina used to sit at the door of Rabbi Hanina. So this guy comes in, and Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina had asked him before he went in, so what's your shayla? So he says, here I have this yorech that I cooked with a Gid HaNasha. So kinafak, when the guy came out, so Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina said to him, so what did he say? Oh, he said to me, it's no problem. Which absolutely shocked Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina because he knew the Mishnah, and this is a Stam Mishnah. How in the world did Rabbi Hanina ignore a Stam Mishnah? He was sure the guy must have misheard. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why don't you go in and ask again? There's some kind of confusion here. So he sent the guy back in. Go back and ask again. So Rabbi Hanina, we had this before. Rabbi Hanina said, all right, who's driving me nuts over here? I got no time for these second guessers. Who's out there? Man, hide the commissarily. Go tell that guy that's sitting at the door, ain't beginning in a zintam. And we don't paskin like that Mishnah. Whoa. And when people would ask the same question to Rav Ami, he didn't have the guts to say, let's ignore a Mishnah. But what he did do is he would say, you know what? Better don't ask me. Ask Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chalub. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chalub, he has a Kabbalah from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that we don't paskin like this Mishnah and ain't beginning in ancient time. But Rabbi Ami himself didn't have the guts to say that because he didn't believe, I don't know, how do I know not to paskin like a Mishnah? So since personally, Leilo Svirale, he would send him to Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chalub. Halacha l'maisa paskins the Gemara, ein begidin benotein tam. So anyway, this Hanhaga that we just learned from Rabbi Ami is a tremendously important halacha in that it is okay for a posek not to paskin, not to tell somebody he's about to eat something that is absolutely usher, and go ask so-and-so who might tell you it's mutter. I can't tell you. And this is something that is done all the time. So that this was that psak of Rav Lichtenstein that he actually, halacha l'maisa, he told somebody, look, this was a famous misquote, because what they did, they misquoted him, and they said, he said we can rely on brain death and harvest organs. And he had never said that. He said, you can go ask so-and-so, and or if you want to, you can go and rely on such and such the post, say, go open his sefer and look at his psak. But he never said himself that I held it. And therefore, here at the halacha, ain't beginning minotin tam, now we can actually paskin directly. So we've had a very exciting day with some tremendously fundamental concepts, and I hope you got them written down, all kinds of new munachim that we got to put onto our little magic papers. So we've got Tam Keiker we spoke about today and the difference between Tam Keiker Pekachim or in general. We have, let's see. Well, actually, we didn't do all that much that was new today. We talked about the Lach Palach, Lach B'Yavesh, Yavesh B'Yavesh. We did discuss that. That was new. And but we'd already talked about Ein Mevat B'Mitzvah L'Chatchila, Min B'Mino, Libet Reb Yehuda. Okay, we'll have to wait till Motzei Shabbos to really sock it to you. And boy, Richie seems to be very happy to be sleeping through that one. Okay, we should hear B'Sorot Tovot. Remember, we're being brought to that moment where we know Ein Lano Mili She'ein El Alavinu Shebashamayim. So cross X out. Trump. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos Kedesh. We'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, then.